Kusela Diko, who is in Parliament, has made a proposal to regulate podcasts and has sparked concern among podcast audiences. With many fearing it could threaten free speech and the unique independent nature of the medium. So she's concerned that podcasts could have an effect on free speech. While some support regulation to curb harmful content, others argue it's a misguided overreach that misunderstands digital platforms and risks silencing voices excluded from mainstream media. So there was a whole talk about this on ENCA, which, by the way, is like, it's like news, but it's news for people who really have to eat with their hands. So the interesting thing about what this Kusela Diko says is that, and have you got that tweet that I showed you? Let me just read it in case they haven't got it, because they've been sorting out all kinds of technical things. So here's what she said, and I just don't know how to even respond to this. Okay, so this is what the supposedly well-informed people in Parliament are saying about what we need to understand. Kusela Diko, the chairperson of the Parliamentary Committee on Communication, has called for urgent development of a framework. I mean, do you remember when they had the budget framework and that went so well for them? Anyway, for podcast regulation, she's pointed to models like self-regulation or co-regulation used by traditional media bosses as examples. That would be like the National Association of Broadcasters or the Broadcasting Complaints Commission or any of those independent communications authorities of South Africa, ICASA. We're not talking about government becoming a nanny state, she says, but there must be codes that people operate under, and people should have access to recourse when harmed. All right. First of all, why do we need codes? Anyone who's a content creator on the internet, not just podcasters, they don't need to subscribe to some kind of code and all get together in a meeting every couple of months, which government can have some oversight over. I have no control over what someone's posting on OnlyFans, for example. I mean, what kind of code are you talking about here? And what about people who are doing unboxing videos? Do they also need to be part of this code just because they're opening toys? I mean, I need to understand whether this Kusela Diko has ever actually gone on the internet, because it seems to me like, as much as you think people in positions of authority and power have good advisors and are on top of all the big stories, they really don't know what the hell they're talking about. So the second thing she says here is people should have access to recourse when harmed. And this is interesting. Oh, is she back? Okay, great. Hello, Ass. Sorry. I was ranting like a lunatic. I can't hear all of you, James, so there's no point.
Can you hear me?
James, what's going on?
Can you hear me at all?
What? Oh, all right. Well, I've lost my train of thought now, so what's the fucking point? There is already recourse for people who are harmed, because all they have to do is use the existing laws. There's crimen in iuria, there's defamation, and there's hate speech law in this country, which I don't agree with, but there is hate speech law. So what more laws do you need? I mean, why create laws for no purpose whatsoever? That's just vexatious and fills up the time of judges, of lawyers. The only ones who get rich out of this are lawyers. And I don't see how it helps either the government or the private citizen or a podcaster. I don't also entirely understand how they think a podcaster could completely hurt a person or harm a person, whereas, you know, traditional media can't, or mobs on Twitter can't. I mean, surely we should be more concerned about mobs of unknown and anonymous people on social media attacking and canceling someone than we should about a podcaster saying some hurtful things. I don't know if that's too much to ask, but this is clearly a bridge too far for Kusela Diko. And I saw Kai Adlanga tweeting about this the other day. I think he must be quite excited about this. There are obviously lots of people who also don't like the idea that there are free speech advocates on platforms like The Real Network, busy saying what they think, doing what they say, allowing their audience to have a say. This is the kind of thing that, you know, just North Korea best Korea. That's what we must be. We shouldn't have any free independent media. And they've just got complete control of the traditional media. I mean, there isn't a mainstream media outlet in this country that government can't bring influence to bear on. I'll tell you where they can't. Right here. So that's super exciting. All right. Is Leanne on? All right, let's go to some of the comments quickly. Yonder says there's a new stream. Okay, I don't know how that works. Congo Chris, I'm not sure what's going on with the streaming this morning. I can't help you with that. They must know in the studio what's going on. Just leaving Gareth to talk, host the show without being streamed. I don't know. Gareth, YouTube are doing what they did in China, slowing down the channel. They're doing it to Chris and to Ronaldo. Yeah, you know, we've got Chris Wyatt coming in a little bit later, and we'll talk to him about this too. Leanne Moles made the bed very nicely this morning, says somebody. Signet in the comments. Marco's encouraging everyone to hit the like button. Please don't, because I don't even like this morning's show. Carla says, just tried the app and it's playing a show from last year. Who's in charge here? Roxanne says, you take it and burn it and they ignore your calls and emails and eventually go away. I did that about 10 years ago. Oh, that's apparently because of the TV license thing, which keeps coming up. So I'm not going to make any more comments about that. I'm not in a particularly good mood to this morning. Teachers are no more the pride of our society, says Vyasin, like it was in the 70s and the 80s and 90s. Too much interference from parents is one of the reasons. Well, yes. I have a friend who's a teacher, and she says it's very, very difficult to be a teacher at the moment. Parents all think they know better than you. The children are never wrong. I don't know how it could possibly carry on working in this way, because teachers just have no authority. And in some places, they have all the authority. You got to find that happy medium. Some parents just don't care at all. And some parents are way too involved. I sent James a WhatsApp to fix the problem he created. And someone says in the comments here, James, please come back from the shitter and press the play button. And then there's also someone else who says, this is what happens when you buy your equipment from Marabastat. So lots of comments on the technical issues that we're having this morning. Okay, have we got something else going on here? Because I don't seem to have the stream. Are we on?
Are we on?
Is she? Can't see her or hear her, so I don't think that's possible. Gott in Himmel. Hello, ass. There we are. Can see it now. Oh, there we are. I don't know. I've been sitting here waiting to figure out what's going on, and clearly they've just figured it out. All right. So we were talking about matric and mathematics, and then I got into this podcasting thing. Tell me what you're up to. Where are you? Like, it looks very pretty. What is that place? And by the way, people were commenting on how beautifully your bed is made.
Well, you see, mine isn't, so I had to come into another room. But no, okay, so I'm at Zabula. I've never heard of it before, and I feel like I've been living under a rock because many people have said, oh, we know Zabula. And I don't know if you know it yourself, but yes, up past the Waterberg area, quite a few game lodges out the side. And so much wildlife as you're walking in and or driving in. I don't know if I'd walk in. So apparently there aren't any super dangerous animals, which is good to know, but there have been sightings of leopard before. Shit. So this is the first time I'm seeing the place in daylight. And I'm hoping that now that I can see everything, I feel a bit more brave walking around. But it's absolutely beautiful. It's a conference and a little bit of time off that we're taking as a team. First time that we have since joining. But yes, yeah, we'll be working from here and just enjoying the change of scenery.
I mean, I've heard so many stories about these people who walk around in these lodges late at night. And if you don't have someone with a gun or a torch or someone who knows the terrain, I mean, there are hippos walking around in some of these riverside lodges. There are these leopards that are stalking in the bushes. You don't know. You're in an actual dangerous place. And tourists who, I mean, I once, oh my God, this is a year ago and some. So it was probably in January of last year. I went to this place, lovely private sort of game lodge near the Kruger Gate in Mpumalanga. So absolutely lovely, wonderful hospitality, game drives, you know, all the things that you want from a five-star lodge. And the one night I was walking to supper and I was staying in one of the chalets that was furthest from the sort of main area, the restaurant reception area. So I did what I usually do, close the door behind me, grab my key, check that I've got everything. And I'm walking. And as I'm walking towards the restaurant, I see this, looks like a dog, right? So I'm like, oh, it's a dog. As I get closer, I realize it's a fucking hyena. Those things are not to be messed with. I mean, it's a scary thing to see that. And you kind of aren't sure now, do I go, shoo, get out of here? Or do I just quietly just track back to my room and just wait a while? Because they had people there. Have guides who will like clear the way for you and everything.
You go through all the emergency settings in your head and you're like, do I lie down? Do I run around a rock? Do I climb a tree? Do I wave my arms up crazily?
Yeah.
That
makes you look more appetizing to the hyena. All right. I want to get into something
talking of appetizing. I remembered last night the story of an attack that took place in South Africa at one of these lodges where the leopard had gone after the particularly slow old lady. Now, you know the people I work with, right?
Yeah.
They're all Gen Zs and fit. So last night while walking to dinner, I trotted along with one hip to join the people at the front of the walk because I thought that's my only bit of safety in numbers. And speaking of the hip, I will be having that replaced. We haven't spoken in a while. We've had some Mondays off. But yes, in a week from now, next Monday.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I'll be getting some new titanium and a new ceramic ball.
So you're getting the upgrade, huh? The bionic upgrade.
I can't seem to hear you.
Oh. Can you hear me now? Ask, can you hear me now? Ay, ay, ay.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, very good. So you're getting the bionic upgrade, huh? Next Monday.
Yes. So then we'll be fully upgraded, 2.0. And my hips will be younger than anyone's I know.
Bitcoin Butt says, leopards do not eat ass. You're safe. All right. I want to talk to you about waste reclaimers because these guys are like a feature of being in Joburg. And we've talked about them before. Most people aren't particularly upset by them. In fact, we consider them a feature rather than a bug. And they do their bit to clean up parts of Joburg. I mean, there's still parts of Joburg that look like absolute shit. So I don't know if that's where they're dumping their stuff or not. But apparently these waste reclaimers are saving Johannesburg millions of rands every year.
Yeah, I've had the same thoughts as you. I wonder where is this stuff going. Interesting things like how much are they being paid per bottle? Are they going to be able to recycle this?
I
know I had a recycling service at one point called Eco Monkey. I'm wondering if they're even still in business, because there's just no need anymore. You separate your garbage,
right?
Put it out, and it just disappears. And yes, these guys can be a hazard on the road and annoying. Turns out they are saving Johannesburg municipalities about 780 million rand annually. And the way they're doing that is saving money in landfill space, thanks to these waste reclaimers. So these waste pickers, I love all these new words, waste reclaimers, waste pickers.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what to call them.
No, we've always said wastepreneurs, I think. Apparently, they collect nearly 90% of all recyclable materials in Johannesburg. They continue to work that without proper recognition, with no infrastructure, with no support. And apparently, they're not homeless people. You would think, okay, these guys don't have jobs, they don't have homes. A lot of them do have homes. They will find a recyclable waste place like we have in nearby, I'm thinking Emerentia or Linden. They need a place where they can, you know, work, where they can aggregate and sort and sell all of their goods. But they don't live there. Apparently, they camp temporarily nearby for work purposes, and then they move on.
All right. But if these guys are saving the municipality millions of rands a year, then the municipality should be paying them. Because that money that they're saving, they can take a proportion of that saving and give these guys some kind of a reward. Because if they're not making tons of money, and I don't think they would be from recycling, maybe we create infrastructure where they can work without making more of a mess. Because I guarantee you, these guys are not doing it out of, you know, environmental consciousness or because they're particularly fastidious people. They're doing it because there's some money, right? And if we can give them enough money to do it in a way that really helps make Joburg beautiful, then I don't think anyone would be opposed to that. I know our municipality are absolutely screwed, though. They can't seem to figure out where all their money goes. They are in huge financial straits, distressing financial straits at the moment. So I'm not entirely sure whether this will be enough to help them. Glad that they're saving the money. I don't have a problem with these guys. I see them, as Charles says in the comments, cruising down the hills at extraordinary speed. I mean, they do on like trolley wheels, right?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, there's actually an organization that's been put together, the ARO, or African Reclaimers Organization.
Yeah.
And apparently they've stepped in now to start giving these guys a voice. They've started giving them essential tools, safety gear. They've been giving them access to better paying markets, all of this support. And the ARO says that the two big hurdles in terms of getting them more support and recognition, the biggest hurdle remains public attitudes, and that those need to change. Because, I mean, if you think about it on your community WhatsApp groups or whatever, I don't think anyone knows how much these guys are doing and that they're actually doing it.
Yeah, but also, what do you want? Do you want people to get together and sing Kumbaya while these guys are separating their rubbish? I mean, I think most people's attitude is that they're performing a useful service as long as they don't cause more trouble than good. So if they take an area and they help to clean it up and we recycle a whole lot of rubbish and they're able to turn that into money, I don't think anybody has a problem with that. I think public attitudes are fine. And if people are angry with them, it's because they are causing disruptions in traffic, or they are making a neighborhood less safe, or they're making it look more shitty. And if those are things they're doing, then they deserve public opprobrium rather than public praise. So I think it all works itself out. I don't like this idea of people in NGOs lecturing the public and what their attitudes should be to other people. Plus, if they are camping in tents around places in Johannesburg, no one wants that. I saw Panyaza Lesufi, interestingly enough, over the weekend. I don't watch a lot of TV news, but he happened to be on bemoaning the fact that Joburg has power, water, waste removal, informal settlements sprouting up. These are big problems that he sees, and he talks about whether he'll address them or not. It's a whole different issue, because obviously the ANC are the lead party in the Joburg Metro, along with like Herman Mashaba's Action SA and people like that. I have yet to see them do anything good at this point. I'd like to. I really would. I'm rooting for Joburg. I don't want to give up on Joburg. I see lots of people, wealthy friends of mine, people who have businesses here, people who have reason to be in Joburg saying, I'm out because it's just too shitty. I can't drive my car here. I have unreliable water. I have unreliable electricity. And I know it's a Monday morning. Last thing we want to do is be moaning about this shit. But these people are saying, I'm either going to Cape Town or I'm moving somewhere else, because Joburg is becoming more and more unpleasant. So if Panyaza and the rest of the guys in our provincial government aren't going to tidy up their act like the recyclers are, and the recyclers seem to be doing a better job than the municipality, then I think we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, they list their second biggest hurdle as the city of Johannesburg. And I somehow think that that's where the problem lies. That's where the difference comes.
Right. Okay, so a couple other things. We've got Dr. Hanan on in just a moment or two. We're going to talk about attachment styles and relationships. So this is interesting, because so many people identify with being anxious, or they avoid attachment in some way. So I wonder if we're over-pathologizing or if there's a real awakening happening. I had a lovely weekend. I spent Friday with a whole lot of my old friends. We got together for the celebration of one of my other friends' birthdays. And so it was a very nice occasion for everybody to get together. And it is funny how, like, we talk about Gen X being raised like wolves, and then everyone after that being raised like soft toys, you know. And it's kind of funny now, because we're getting to the stage where a lot of our friends are, you know, raising kids, and the kids are growing up, and some of the kids are already in high school. And you get these conversations about anxiety and depression and mental health, which were just not conversations we had, right, Leanne, when we were kids?
No, 100%. Attachment styles is something that I've heard of. I've heard of love language. But I think because I'm not actively in the dating scene, I haven't paid much attention to these things. So I'd be interested to see. You know, sometimes it takes a new way of looking at things to make you realize why perhaps you don't always enjoy being in a relationship, or it might explain something from your past. So I'd be interested to know.
Yeah, I mean, this is an ongoing subject on this show, so we've discussed it a million times, and we'll probably carry on discussing these things a million times. It's never going to get boring. Some people are just choosing to not be in relationships. There are also lots of people came up on Friday night who have decided they don't want kids, and then other people who have kids, but they will be honest enough to say to you their life would have been just as good if they hadn't. And that's a hard thing to get a parent to admit. There's one friend of mine. She says she loves her kids. She's very happy she had them. They are a thrill and a delight, and they're the best part of her life in so many ways. But she does think that if she'd equally not had them, she would have been just as happy. And I think I believe her. There's no reason for someone to lie about that, after all.
No, exactly. I saw an interesting take from somebody who had decided not to have children.
Yeah.
And as a person like that myself, a question that you often get is, what's going to happen when you're old? Who's going to look after you? And her answer to this was, why would I spend 20 plus years raising a child and having them in my life for another 20 to 30 years, just so that the last 5 years of my life, I was looked after.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all. And it's a hard thing. I mean, listen, again, I want to give parents credit. We give them a lot of shit on this show when, you know, they end up raising horrible children. But there are a lot of parents raising lovely children. Thank God for that. By the way, speaking of children, Have you got that map that I sent you, James? This is a fascinating thing that I saw just the other day about replacement population. So this is the birth rate in 2023, okay? And this is how they project things to be going into the future. Think about how this is going to change the population dynamics of the world. So that map shows you where it's dark in purple and blue. Those are countries that have a high birth rate, total number of births per 1,000 people in any given year. And this is the year 2023. So anything that's light blue or white, they've got a major problem with replacing their own population. The only country the only two countries outside of Africa that are showing birth rates in excess of 40 per 1,000 people. Okay, this is number of births per 1,000. That's not even that much. So 40 births per 1,000 people happening in only two countries outside of Africa. All the rest are in Africa. And those two countries are Yemen and Afghanistan, from what I can see here. Every other country that's producing enough kids, enough, I say, to not only replace, but remember, in this thing, I mean, this is just terrifying because this is per 1,000 people, total number of births. So we're not even doing replacement. And Africa is the leading continent there by a long way, which means that somewhere in the next 40 to 50 years, when we're talking about kids and parents and not having kids, and somewhere in the next 40 years, Africa is going to be the only place on the continent that is producing enough people to replace the people who are currently alive. We're actually seeing the opposite of what they predicted, Leanne. Remember when we were kids, kept saying, oh my God, the population of the earth is just crazy. There are billions of people. We're adding a billion every year. We're going to be overpopulated, was what they're telling us. And you look at that and you see actually the opposite is true. But the good news for Africa, this is going to be the continent that allows the world's population to continue to flourish. And that's good news. It's especially good news for us because we will be the place that everything starts to happen in. We will be the market for buying things. We will be the place where kids need to be taught things. We'll be the place where employment in terms of numbers of people who you can employ in places will come from. We've just got to get our act together. And that last little bit is the catch. All right, is Dr. Hanan on? Very good. Let's talk to Dr. Hanan. I've been looking forward to this. You know what, Doc? It's been two bloody weeks we haven't seen each other, and I think my mental health is suffering as a result.
So tell me more about your problems.
No, well, I've been following you on social media. You post some very cool stuff, so I don't feel I've been missing out, actually. How's that going? Are you enjoying posting that stuff?
Yeah, it's a step away from kind of my normal, you know, day-to-day stuff. So it's great to be able to contribute in other ways, but take it from where it comes from. You know, it's very difficult to really get into the nuanced stuff in the 15-second or 30-second or 45-second clip. So take it with a pinch of salt and kind of dive deeper into it if you get more information.
Well, that's why we have you here. Okay, so let's talk about attachment styles and relationships, because this is a burgeoning area of conversation and discussion, let alone psychology. What are the different kinds of attachment styles, and how are people's relationships evolving? Leanne and I were having an amateurish conversation about this before you came on. Help set the scene for us.
So attachment styles is a theory that came up not too long ago, and it just describes basically how a child grows up and their attachment to their parents and how they copy paste that same attachment to later on relationships in their lives. So you get the secure attachment where it's a beautiful dynamic between a parent and a child, and a child goes out into the world and has beautiful attachments to friends and family and loved ones and the romantic relationships. And then you get that anxious attachment style where it's an overcompensation. So the child feels anxious and wants to overcompensate and be overly coddled by mom and dad and overly around them and doesn't want to let them go and has a deep need to not let mom or dad disappear. And what ends up happening as an adult is that you don't want your partner to go away. You always want to be around your partner. So it's an overcompensation because I feel anxious. I want you around me as a doo-doo blanket to make me feel secure. And then you get the avoidant attachment style where the parent maybe is overly punishing, and the child, in order to avoid being punished or avoid the consequences, wants to run away, wants to create that distance. And what ends up happening in relationships later on in life is that the person wants to create distance, doesn't want, or she doesn't want to be overly connected. The sense of companionship doesn't really appeal to them. They want to create more distance. And actually, it just shares, these attachment styles are just a way to show patterns of behavior. So as adults, we see a secure attachment style, an anxious attachment style, or an avoidant attachment style. And it just shows the pattern of behavior and attachment to another adult.
You know, I know somebody who, she's a single mom raising a kid, and the kid and she almost have like a weird codependent relationship. And again, I'm no psychologist. I certainly don't think the details of this are things that I want to discuss in public. I don't want to embarrass her or make her kid's life more difficult. But there is a strange, like a neediness between the two of them. The kid doesn't feel comfortable when she's not around. I mean, he's like 4 or 5 or whatever now. She is kind of, her whole life has become the kid. And I wonder if that isn't precisely what you're talking about, that unhealthy attachment, where they're both fulfilling other kinds of needs for each other that really aren't a healthy parent-child relationship. Do you encounter this a lot in your practice?
I do see that a lot, and I'll just mention two things. Number one, there's no perfect way to raise a child. Sure. There's no manual for it. We try and buy the manual, and you know, once you have a child, you use it as a doorstopper, because in the reality and theory are two different things. So you think you want to raise your child in a particular way, but there's so many variables that come into play that it's really impossible to follow one particular way or one glove. It's all approach. It doesn't work that way. You want to, ultimately, our job as parents is to raise independent children that are able to function in the real world with all the multitude of tools, within all the multitude of kind of variables that are going to happen to them, to be able to overcome obstacles and to adult in a very challenging, you know, world circumstance that we're living in. So you want to ensure that your child is able to function independently. That's our job as parents, and function maturely. The other thing that I want to mention is that, you know, it's so easy to stitch your life backwards and go, well, the reason why I am this way is because of my attachment to my parents.
Right.
That's a really reductionist kind of viewpoint, where we think one thing leads to the way that we are today. But there's so many factors that we are not aware of. So many factors that have happened throughout your life that has led you to attach or not attach in a particular way, that you can't just blame mom or dad or the lack of attachment or too much attachment for the way that you are now. And even if we could, my advice always, Gareth, and you know this, my advice always, don't look backwards to fix your current life. Rather look forwards and see what can I do today in order to progress my life forward. How many times on the show, I've mentioned the chin down versus the chin up approach.
Right.
The chin down is what's wrong with me. Why am I behaving this way? Why me? And the chin up is what can I do about my life right here, right now to make it better? It's very easy to look in the rearview mirror and try, as I said, edit your life backwards and go, well, the reason why I am today is because of this or that. But it's very hard to go, well, what can I do about it? Because that requires you to step out of your comfort zone, requires bravery. And I encourage everybody to look forward, look ahead, look at how you can make your life better with bravery.
I love that. Okay, so that's a great place to hop off. But I wonder if Leanne has any questions, because I haven't even let her ask you anything. Ass, is there anything you want to throw in here?
I was just thinking of what happens when you have a partner and you each have different ways of attachment. And how that can also vary. It's not going to be the same the whole time. And it's not always easy when your partner is in a bit of a different mindset. They're feeling like they want independence. They're feeling like, you know, they don't feel as lovey-dovey towards you. And if you're in a place of need at that time, how difficult that can be. But I don't think it stays the same all the time. Am I right?
It's so easy to overcomplicate relationships. In essence, all relationships are is really a fulfillment of needs. So you want to be with a person that fulfills your needs in a way, in ways that make you better. So leave the term attachment style because it just overcomplicates it. There's certain things that you need in a relationship, and your job is to communicate those needs effectively, clearly, precisely. I always say, and I live by the philosophy of clarity precedes agreement. Don't commit to anything before you're clear on what the other person needs. And your job as a communicator is not just to understand what your partner needs, but as more importantly, is to for you to communicate clearly and specifically and behaviorally what you need. Your partner will fulfill it and you have a good relationship. Your partner won't fulfill it and there'll be a built up of resentment. So communicate your needs, make sure that your needs are being fulfilled, make sure you fulfill your partner's needs and obviously progress forward.
All right, I love it. That's some very, very good advice. And thank you, Dr. Hanan. We needed Thanks, you more God. Than you know. And we will see you again next Monday.
See you then.
Awesome. Dr. Hanan Bushkin, and he is our resident shrink. You know, Leanne and I would be complete basket cases if it wasn't for him. You may laugh, yeah. But it's not so funny on this. By the way, I do need to get together with you at some point because it would be fun to have one of those lunches. I every now and then find enough. We manage to chisel a tiny bit of time out of Dr. Hanan's schedule, and I get to have a lunch or a breakfast or something with him. Haven't done one of those in a while. And have I become a chocolate fireplace in the meantime? You got lots of work to do when I see you.
can't wait. See you guys.
Very good. Lovely. Yeah. All righty. When we come back, we'll talk to none other than Colonel Chris Wyatt. I'm excited to see him again. It's always nice to have him around, and we've got lots to talk about this morning. So if you're looking for something to get your teeth into, something really meaty, that's coming up in the next hour. As you can go and get on with your day of conferencing and the rest of it. I'm not going to keep you around for that, and we've got plenty to talk about anyway. I'll see you after your hip has made its recovery.
Fantastic. And just to let you know, the reason why Dr. Hanan was laughing is because you said we would be absolute basket cases if it weren't for you. He laughed because we're already basket cases.
Oh, that's probably true. Him. Yes, that is true. Listen, don't let them fuck up your hip operation, please. I don't want to have you come in here on a skateboard like those dogs who've had their back legs amputated. All right, it's very embarrassing. Please don't.
Okay, thanks for that.
Leanne scooting around with her hindquarters chopped off. No, thank you. Not very good. I don't want to see you pushing a load of like municipal rubbish down the highway for sorting and you have no legs.
I promise to hide any faults with maybe one shoe that's higher than the other.
Yeah, please. Otherwise, I'm not screwing fucking trolley wheels onto your hip bones if this goes wrong.
Thanks for that.
All right, we'll be back in a moment or two. Don't go anywhere.
South Africans love sports, and they also love Jaws. So this episode